We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And last night, we had a couple of game fours that went in different directions. Boston, with the huge 43-point fourth quarter, tied things up against Milwaukee. And then Golden State ended up coming back at home against Memphis without Ja Morant. Both games were very entertaining, guys. These playoffs continue to be fantastic. I'd like to start with the early game, with that Boston-Milwaukee game. This has been a series, D, with a lot of adjustments so far, and still several to go. You made a comment recently in our text thread when we were talking about the whole rock, paper, scissors thing and how different teams are different versions of that. And these teams are two rocks, right? And Milwaukee is probably the bigger rock, especially with someone like Robert Williams out in game four. But they're also missing their second best shot creator behind Giannis. And so this has been a fascinating series. You can't really fake desperation. Boston went into that fourth quarter down by seven. If they lose that game, they go down 3-1. And this Milwaukee team, even without Middleton, I think would be really difficult to beat three times in a row. So they did what they had to do. I think they're the slight favorites in this series. I'd love to hear what you think, what you've seen.
I agree that they're slight favorites after winning this game. The lift on Giannis is so extraordinary, and he's tasked with doing just a bit too much. And when you're that great and you're still tasked with doing a bit too much, then you know the ask for like a normal person is just ridiculously too high. He's so good that he's able to manage things in an appropriate way. But I thought towards the end of that game, he was tired. I just thought he was tired.
Yeah, me too.
And Mike had brought this up the other day about Luka, and how Luka, one of the reasons why Luka looked worn out at the end of like game two, for example, is because no one had joined the party. And Mike had mentioned that, you know, well, yeah, you get targeted so much defensively, and then you're doing so much voluntarily, offensively, that you sort of do it to yourself. Mm-hmm. Well, Giannis has no such luxuries with Middleton out. He's looking around like Will Smith in that last episode of The Fresh Prince to a certain extent, right? Where he's just like, oh, where's everyone at? And really, he's just looking for another shot creator in Middleton. There was a lot of, and we'll get to this later, with Dylan Brooks and his shot selection and how poorly he shot against the Warriors. But go look at Drew Holiday's stat line.
Drew Holiday, man, is an adventure as a guy to root for and cheer for. Like, defensively, he's great, obviously. But offensively, man, he's hit and miss. And he has value. But I think that when you say that Giannis, that there's too much of an ask on him, Drew being your number two in the playoffs in a high-level series, also probably too big of an ask.
Yeah, and so it goes back to slotting, Mike. It goes back to, like, what's your appropriate and right-sized role. And Holiday was a big difference maker for them offensively in enough games last season in their run to the championship. Like, oh, look at that. Drew with a 28-point game on high-efficient shooting. And then he wins you a game, and it's like, great. But two games later, he's 3-for-14 or 5-for-19, and it's just sort of like that's what happens for Drew Holiday. He's not an elite shooter. He's not an elite shot creator. So, Mike, the thing that I was seeing was not only what Pete mentioned about desperation from Boston side, but they just had – they had one or two more guys who were able to do something offensively, like a massive game from Horford and a good game from Tatum, and Brown was doing just enough, and then a little bit of Smart here.
Smart had a couple. Right? Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. That it's just like, okay, well, that put them over the top. And meanwhile, Giannis is huffing and puffing at the end of the game because he needs to do everything, but you can't do everything for every minute and still feel like you have enough in reserve at the end. And you need a superhuman effort at that point. And he can give that to you, but you can't expect that every single night.
Yeah, this is why when Middleton went down, I had to change my pick from Milwaukee to Boston. It's just that kind of a player. Milwaukee needs that. They just have to have somebody else who can come in and make shots. And when Holiday's not, and he wasn't, right? I think it was 5-for-22 in this game. Mm-hmm. And that was killer for them because they're not going to have Wes Matthews. He was effective. He actually made three of his four threes, and I thought he was pretty good defensively. He was a +7, but he can't go up a notch, right? He can't lift his game up to the next level. Grayson Allen probably isn't going to be able to lift his game up to the next level against Boston type defense. In a regular season, maybe you'll hit six threes some night. And then off the bench, you know, they've got role players. So they need some switches with what the Lakers had on their roster this year, where they had some guys that could potentially step up in situations, but couldn't do a lot of the role things. And Milwaukee doesn't have that next guy. So they have to have certain base level performances from Giannis, which you're always going to get. And Holiday has to play that well, too. But I actually thought that Milwaukee, aside from, you know, Holiday not shooting well, played well enough to win. Boston gets some credit. Like, Al Horford was insane. Mm-hmm. He had just an absolutely ridiculous game. He made 5-of-7 threes, 11-of-14 shots overall. Every time they collapsed to try and contain Tatum and sometimes Brown, which they did well, by the way, Tatum was 11-for-24. Horford hit, it seemed like, every shot. And that was the backbreaker. A lot of them were threes. And you have to take away certain things. And that's what the Bucks have lived by. And in this case, they died by it. So I too give Boston now maintaining a slight edge as they now go home. And this is the basketball gods part of this, where Milwaukee gave them the upper hand. They just gave them that 2 seed because they decided, you know what? We don't want to play Brooklyn in round one. So they tanked their last game. Boston had the tiebreakers. Boston said, okay, we'll take it. And they handled Brooklyn. And now they're in the driver's seat with that home court, which in Boston makes a difference. It doesn't make a massive difference in every single arena, but by this point of the season, it does in most. So I have something to kick back to you, but first, Pete, get your thoughts in on this series.
Yeah, on the home court advantage aspect, I think Milwaukee, especially as a defending champion, is impacted by that a little bit less. That said, I agree with you on the basketball gods front in that you're way more likely to catch breaks when you just do your job. You know, you've got a win in front of you, go get it, and everything else will work itself out. And then you end up facing that team that doesn't have its second best shot creator in the second round. These things always tend to kind of work out that way. I've thought before this series that to beat Boston, you needed to be able to switch with size. And that's something that in their last couple of matchups between Milwaukee and Boston, Milwaukee had done more than they have so far in this series. Brook Lopez has been a bigger part of this series than I expected him to be. And part of that is because guys like Wes Matthews and Jrue Holiday have done well on Tatum and Brown, respectively. Now, I want to zero in on that matchup, D, on those two matchups. So you've had Holiday on Jaylen Brown and Wes Matthews on Tatum. And now Wes is a guy that we're familiar with, obviously. I was surprised by that matchup because I've been talking a lot about how Boston is a team that starts that likes to kind of plow through you. And while Wes is certainly a guy that's up to the challenge, after a certain size discrepancy, like even if you're up for it, if the other guy's up for it and he's 6'10 and big, he can still exert his will. But Wes had won a lot of those battles through 3.5 games. But in that second half, Tatum really started to look to attack the basket and attack the drop coverages and kind of get into the paint in ways that he hadn't for most of the series. Like the way to beat him, quote unquote, and he had a bad shooting game the game before, is force him into floaters, force him to contort, force him into like pull up mid-range jumpers that are contested. These are the spaces where he's solid at these things, but he's not going to kill you the way that he does in getting all the way to the basket. And so that was the big thing in this game, was seeing that second half where Tatum really started to exert his size advantage over Matthews. And that's something that I think that we're getting into that part of the series where, like, at the end of the game, Budenholzer subbed out Lopez, but subbed in Allen and went really small. So it was like a four-guard lineup with Giannis at the five. I think Portis is going to have to be more of a significant figure because I still think you need size out there for them. But I think we're entering the part of the series where Milwaukee will probably start to switch a little bit more. So let's take a break. On the other side, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
It's all super interesting with Lopez. One of the things, and Tatum's ability to drive, right? One of the things that's interesting to me is, this is why Horford's game was so important to Boston, because when you play drop coverage, there's a couple of areas of the floor when you're the screener that open up for you. One is the pop, right? And so Mike mentioned, or you mentioned, Pete, Horford went 5 for 7 from three, right? So there's the pop element and the spacing element in general. And the other is the pocket pass, Because when you play in the drop and then you're necessitating that the guard go over the top of the screen because you're in a drop and the guy's a good enough pull-up shooter like Tatum is, then you have to go over the top. That creates the bigger the drop coverage, or the deeper the drop, then the bigger the window.
The window.
For the pocket pass. And for the angles that you generate as a passer for Tatum. So Horford in the fourth quarter, a couple of those shots that he hit were just like, oh, look, there's an 8-foot jumper.
Yep.
Right. And it's like Horford's too good of a player and he was having too good of a night to give him those sorts of shots. And so that's where, to me, Horford's play was super important, because if Horford is, instead of being superhuman, which he was, it was literally, I think, his highest scoring playoff game ever, right? Mm-hmm. So he literally had the best scoring night he's ever had in a very distinguished career, right? Horford may not be a Hall of Famer, but he's been a wonderful, high-level player for a long time in this league.
So, Darius, would you have switched up that at some point and said, hey, you know what, let's take the risk of showing less attention to Tatum and just not get, because they kept giving him the looks even after he was hot.
What I would have done was I would have then changed up the coverage with Lopez again and started to vary things a little bit more. Lopez's size is super important, and his shooting and his rebounding ability. Like, Lopez is going to get you more things. And I didn't think Portis was being particularly impactful, no. Pete. So it's just like, what do? You either go super small or you stay bigger. And I think Lopez has a better chance there.
Yeah, Portis to me is in the, if you're starting to switch more, because I very much agree with that, like, don't let guys get comfortable. And the thing about a guy like Horford is, he against a team like Milwaukee that protects the rim so much, he's just going to roll. When he rolls to the basket on those, against those drop coverages, it's going to be into that little 8-foot range where he's got that little floater. It's kind of like, you know how I always think about Isaiah Hartenstein, where against the Lakers, where he's got that little floater from 6 to 8 feet. That's the range against those deep drops. The game has become more and more this like paint by numbers type of thing, where if the defense does this, then this is the counter to that. And that's one thing that Boston and a guy like Horford, who's one of those guys that's been around forever, that he knows, you do this, I do that. It's just this really quick instinctual decision-making component that when he's got, and then when he's got no pressure on his shot at all, he's going to nail every one of those. So like, even though he had a monster night, like I feel like people, when that happens, are like, oh, Horford's not going to go off like that again. It's like, well, if you guard him like that, he might not have 30, but he's going to have 22, 24 on those kind of shots.
If he's wide open and he's then starts to feel like I need to be assertive offensively, because that's where Horford was lagging behind in some of the earlier games this series. It was just like, okay, his inclination is to swing or to make a play for a teammate. His inclination is not like, oh, let me get up 18 shots. So, Mike, to answer your question, I might have blitzed a couple of times. I might have shown higher and shocked at the level of the ball. I might, like, Milwaukee's a good enough defense to adjust midstream for a possession or two. Like, hey, let's just take a timeout.
Yeah.
Like, right. Like, okay, two possessions from now, boom, we're doing this. And we'll do that for one possession just to sort of give Tatum a different look. And then the next look, do something different again and just make him think a little bit like, what's coming this next particular time? Because honestly, there was a point in the fourth quarter before Boston really went on their run where I thought, this is a one possession game. Like, it's a one possession game at the 7-minute mark. Right now, and that 7-minute mark might as well be the 30-second mark, because if you control this part of the game, you can stem the tide or turn the tide back, and then you can win. But if you let go of the rope in that tug of war that we were talking about, well, now the flag is moved a foot and a half in the other direction, and getting that foot and a half back is too difficult against a high-level team. And so I was just looking for a little bit of, you got to change something up. And they went personnel, which I get, right? They changed the lineup. They tried to go for a different look. But by that point, things had avalanched on them to a certain extent. And a 10-point lead felt like a 1,000-point lead in that sort of game, where these defenses are just bludgeoning each other. They are so physical. When they talk about a rock fight, it's just like, that's what that is. This is like medieval times here. These dudes are out here with big old axes and clubs with spikes and literally just like knock down, drag out battles defensively.
And we talk about too how you can't fake that last level of desperation, and Boston had it because they didn't want to go back home trailing 3-1. And so they knew that they had to bring their best. And in Milwaukee, I thought Giannis, who always tries to match, was there for that until he got worn down and he had to actually go take a sub with about 5 minutes left or so, or maybe it was four, and to get a minute's worth of rest before coming back in. And then, you know, guys like Derek White, he may have had his best game of the series. He made four shots where he's had games where he's made none. Marcus Smart had some huge plays where he scored inside late. So Boston had all of their troops and they played really well. And now it's, can somebody in Milwaukee that's unexpected, can Grayson Allen hit four threes, right?
Or Connaughton or Bobby Portis or one of those dudes to sort of step up somebody's and have a big night. One last point about Giannis, Mike. I thought him being tired, and I mentioned this earlier, impacted his shot selection a couple of times. He
settled for jumpers, man.
He took a couple of mid-rangers where he just felt like, yeah, this is the one for this possession. I'm just taking this 17-footer. And, like, I get it. I get it. We've seen this with LeBron, and LeBron is a decade older, so it makes sense. But it's just like, you can't go in there every single time.
Yeah.
It's like, you're asking too much, man. You're asking too much.
We talk about guys like Giannis and LeBron as being superhuman so often that we very much forget that, no, they're totally human, right? Like, and it's like, okay, we need you to attack Al Horford and Grant Williams and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown every single time down court and not get tired.
No, right? Defend. Like,
take the punishment. Be the best defensive player in the league too. Exactly, Mike. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true though. That's the crazy part of the expectation game, and when you really get to that peak kind of pantheon level of what these guys can do. So it is funny what our expectations are for Giannis and LeBron, and then we're like, why is he settling for jump shots? Like, come on, man.
Right?
You know,
from our couch, right?
Yeah. Speaking of all time greats, let me just hijack this real quick because I got a tweet from @TravisHB. I saw you guys were on this, and Travis is always hitting us with stuff.
Yeah, what's up, Travis?
So I had missed this originally, but apparently Shaq made some comments about Rudy Gobert. That's nothing new. And Rudy commented back. And so here, what I'm looking at in front of me is Shaq said Rudy wouldn't be able to guard him, is the summary. I think that Bleacher Report summarized it. And then Rudy apparently commented, I would lock his ass up. And then he used the lock emoji. And so I, as you guys are, you know, born and raised with Shaq, with prime Shaq, I thought I would just, and I responded to Travis, that I thought you guys could handle this one. So I'm just going to leave it up there and let you respond to that.
Look, for some reason, Utah has always had some tall, goofy defensive center our entire life. It's like they have to have that kind of guy, from Mark Eaton to Greg Ostertag and Greg Foster, the Gregs of the 90s, to now Rudy Gobert. The things that Shaquille O'Neal would do to Rudy Gobert in single coverage, you remember what he did to Mutombo?
Yes.
And look, I'm not someone, I hope y'all know that, like, I love today's game. I'm not of that, like, oh, back then, like, everybody would have been better. I've never seen anybody like Shaq, Darius. Like, there's never been a player in my lifetime that was quite like him. And the idea that anyone, and this isn't even really like an insult to Gobert, right? That the idea that anybody could lock him up. You remember how Shaq used to, like, Shaq understood how to be big. Not only was he bigger than everyone else, he understood how to use that to his advantage better than anybody else, in ways where, like, especially with Gobert's tall center of gravity, like, you know that play where he dunks on Chris Dudley, where it's like bump, bump, drop step, dunk on you? Like, Shaq against guys with tall centers of gravity like that would just, he would have stuffed Gobert into a locker.
So there is a play that Shaq had, and I think it was, it might have been either when Mutombo went to the Nets or it was in the 76ers finals. But Shaq had this great ability to jump step, but he would jump step and he would sort of in a crouch right? And so he would like lead with his shoulder and he would get into a crouch and he would like use his momentum to knock you off, and then he would explode and he would go over the top of you with one hand.
Yeah, so you're coiled when you do that, right? Like, yes. That jump stop into the paint, he's in that crouch, like tucked into himself. So yes. He can keep in the ball close to him, and good luck stripping it down low, because that was your only chance. But you weren't going to strip that from Shaq. And then, yeah, that explosion up. And as he came up out of that, man, just the power that he would generate was nuts.
So he did that to Mutombo a couple of times, and Mutombo just went backwards. And Mutombo's probably the closest thing that you would have seen to a Gobert.
Yeah.
And so, Rudy Gobert, you would have gotten folded in half like a Craftmatic adjustable bed. You would have been put into these like shapes by Shaq. This is what would have happened to you. And so there is no lock. And if you would have actually dared to say some dumb shit like, oh, I would have locked him up.
Mutombo had 15 pounds on Rudy Gobert, according to quick research. So,
And as many defensive player of the year awards, he was a monster defensive player.
So just to, so Rudy has even, just to build into your point, right? So Rudy has less in the back of the trunk than Mutombo did.
So Shaq was also king of petty.
Yes.
He invented stories about players just so that he would go out there and maul them. He invented stories. The David Robinson didn't shake my hand when I was at, right? Those stories were fake.
I don't think everybody knows that story.
Mad sensitive, as you hopefully can still tell that just by watching Inside the NBA. Yes. Like, what do you think? Chuck's entire purpose on the show is to find ways to needle Shaq. And I really hope that they show him this tweet if they didn't already when they get on tonight, or tomorrow, whatever.
So Shaq tells this story about how when he was like in middle school or something, and he went to go watch a Spurs game or went to some sort of camp, and he tells this story about how David Robinson was there, and Shaq like introduced himself and like, you're my idol sort of thing, looking up to him as an up and coming player. And David Robinson just shunned him. And Shaq had told this story in the past and like used that as motivation in order to destroy David Robinson. And
he kicked Robinson's ass over and over again.
There's a couple of distinct plays there. So Shaq got David Robinson in an All-Star game. Look it up. Shaq dunk David Robinson All-Star game. And it's and it's brutal. And then he got him in a couple of regular season games too. Robinson also like stole a scoring record from Shaq, I think, where he scored like 72 or something.
71
like,
in the final game against the Clippers. Yep.
Anyways.
94, so, I think. Yeah.
So Shaq told this story for the longest time during his NBA career. And then after he's retired, he's just like, nope, I made it up. Right? Like, needed some motivation in order to play against this great player. And so Shaq would just make it up. So if you actually came at him with like, oh, yes, I'm defensive player of the year, right? Like, I don't know how you say barbecue chicken in French, but I don't know.
Maybe it would be like, Darius. MJ's chilling on the sideline, just cracking up. Oh, that's good.
Oh, those cute dogs. Anyways, so thank you for the little side tangent ability to rant here, Mike. Let's go into break here. And when we come back on the other side, let's talk a little bit Golden State Warriors and Memphis Grizzlies. So, gentlemen, it's 3-1. It's the only playoff series that is 3-1. The Warriors were playing an unserious brand of basketball for three quarters. A little bit more than three quarters. I actually thought Memphis did a very good job, too, of like, okay, we're going to lean into a different aspect of ourselves without Ja Morant. So Morant was ruled out, knee soreness, and Memphis is quite familiar with playing without Ja Morant. Mm-hmm. So, Mike, talk to me about what you saw from both the Memphis perspective and then from Golden State's perspective and how the team sort of found a way to pull it out at the end.
Yeah, this was a classic what happens when game in the playoffs. And when one team star is out, the other team relaxes. Check, right? When the team that has played without that star knows that they have to rally around the flag and play a certain serious brand of basketball, check. So all of these things happen up until the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
and then Memphis basically turned into Minnesota from round one. And, I think Coach Pete was probably watching Dylan Brooks and just having a real hard time, So I'll let Pete get to that. But The first thing that we have to remember, for starting with Memphis, they were 20-4, I believe, without John Morant. And so it's a complicated thing, right? We all love John Morant, but when LeBron is out, you know, whatever team he's ever been on, his team basically sucks. And so it says something about Memphis for sure, but what does it say about Ja? I don't know. I do know this, though. Tyus Jones is an excellent point guard, and teams don't target him game plan wise in the same way that they're going to target Ja to try to take advantage of some of what he does defensively. Even though he's solid, he's still small. Like, he's a better defender than Ja, but they also don't just, they just, teams don't think about it in the games that Morant is out, at least from what I've seen. So you don't really get to take that advantage of Memphis defensively like you can sometimes with Ja's on the court. So that's one. Then on the other hand, the defensive game plan always focuses on Ja Morant. And a key to that is to pack the paint and to back off. And Memphis doesn't have a lot of shooting in that starting lineup. So that's the game plan. Now, Ja sometimes just completely eviscerates the game plan because he can get past all of that initial defense and finish in any God knows number of ways. Plus, he's been hitting his threes this series. But so he's out. What's the game plan? Well, Tyus Jones can shoot. So you got to play completely differently.
Different player. Yep.
And then when, if you do get out there, guess what else he can do? He can get in the mid-range. He's got a floater. He's got a little leaner. He's got, and then he's smart enough to dribble back out. He's going to get Jaren Jackson some touches on the post and get him off the three-point line. So it's like a totally different team, and yet they're still big and athletic on the wings. So it's there's a reason why they didn't just win 20 to 24 games for no reason. So Golden State really got lucky to find some way to manipulate a win here, and Steph hitting shots late and a couple defensive plays. But those were just a few of the things I was noticing that about Memphis specifically, and why they're still pretty dangerous without Ja.
And further to your point about how they're a different team with Ja out, and especially in this past game, they started Steven Adams, which just gives them a completely different look, and I think plays into something that Golden State is kind of weak on the interior, just in terms of physical strength. Going from watching Boston, Milwaukee to Memphis, Golden State, just from a physicality standpoint, just really different ends of the spectrum. And so you have a very different team, along with the points that you made about the, you know, letting down when the other team's star player is out. I'd even argue that being down 2-1 gives you that degree of desperation where Memphis is going to come out a little hotter. Now, when you start a guy like Adams, the reason he wasn't playing at all before that is his ability to defend the perimeter. When you do that against Golden State, you're like, oh God, this is going to go badly. They missed their first 15 threes in that game. Klay was a hot mess for a lot of it, and that's something that they're going to have. Klay has been off and on, but they'll need a better version of him to compete in the next round, and I actually don't think these first two rounds prepare Golden State particularly well for that next round. But D, that's something that come the fourth quarter, I thought that's when Ja was missed, and in some ways it mirrors Milwaukee's problem in that, for some reason, whatever reason, I'd be curious your thoughts on why you think this happens, but the fourth quarter of close playoff games are really shot creator, individual shot creator territory. And what I saw at the end of that game, Memphis is a team that at the beginning of the playoffs, remember, I was like, this is the team I'm going to root for. I know they're not going to win a chip or anything like that, but they're young and they're fun. Every time I watch them in the regular season, I had a good time. I'm going to adopt the Grizzlies. Watching them these first two rounds, I'm like, this team is so aggravating, right? It's like Brooks is certainly the spearhead of that, but he's definitely not the only guy. Like that Jaren Jackson three from 30 feet that Draymond saw 5 seconds in advance. Like, they're a young team, and these types of experiences come with being a young team past the first round in the playoffs. But Memphis is a team that, again, I was rooting for, and I'm still rooting for them in a way, but like, they've continued to piss me off. And I was like, I've watched enough basketball this year that was irritating, or it's like, I can't adopt a team that's also going to frustrate me. So Golden State's clearly the better of the two teams. But I'm curious how you view Memphis, because I think this is a year that's part of their story, but they're too young and inexperienced to get past a team like Golden State.
All the points that both of you made about Memphis being a different team and sort of how they shape-shift to becoming more of a defensive, slowed-down team with Jones. Mm-hmm. Jones is a much steadier guy. It's like the tortoise versus the hare.
Yeah.
Right? And so at the end, the race is going to be close regardless between the two. And so Ja is the hair. He is going to just bounce around and bring energy, and there is a bit of chaos that he induces within the flow of the game. That doesn't mean he can't play a controlled game. He's such a wonderful playmaker and passer, and it's the part of his game that I think allows him to really propel his team forward. It's not the not just the 40-something points that he can score on any given night. It's the crazy, like, oh, look at this wraparound pass to a guy who's wide open from three because the defense is all in the paint, all because of me. But Jones brings a steadiness in the sort of classic point guard sort of way that is useful to a team that does have some other pieces. Brooks went full John Starks in this game.
Jesus.
If you don't get the reference, go back to like the finals that the Knicks played against the Rockets. I think it was maybe game 5 or game 6.
94, I think.
Yeah. Starks had a particularly poor shooting night. And
2 for 18 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he just didn't read the room in terms of like understanding where his place in the hierarchy should have been based off of the flow of the game and how he was playing particularly. It was the memento game. Like, the thing that happened just a minute ago, like, I can't remember. And anymore, so, oh, missed shot. Totally forgot that one. I'm just going to shoot it again because this one feels good. And Brooks had just some low-level decision-making plays in terms of shot selection that I don't know what sort of conscience he's going to have around stuff like that. He doesn't seem the type to, like, lament too much on his poor plays because that's kind of who Brooks is. He is a confident dude. But I thought that he shot them out of it in ways that Klay Thompson was trying to do for the Warriors on a few different possessions as well. So I thought the Warriors generated a lot of good shots.
Darius, one note on that. Just one note. This is where, though, if they were able to kind of make up for not having Ja, those crunch time moments are part of where they've it's all been the ball in Ja's hands there. And there, so even though Tyus Jones, I think, could continue to get them better looks than Dylan Brooks is, at that point, is basically looking him off. Like, nah, you know, you're not at the level here where you're just going to go get us a shot. So I got this, you know, and that's the part where you're missing your guy and are used to playing a certain way that I think was problematic for them.
Well, I also thought, too, that the Warriors were putting size at the point of attack defensively. So they were using Wiggins on the point guard a lot, regardless of who was playing point guard. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think that actually mattered for most of the game, but it did start to matter in the fourth quarter. Like, I thought Wiggins really picked up his defensive intensity and really locked in a way where he was turning Jones a lot in the backcourt. And it was really, he was really making them use a lot of clock. And so that's when I thought Brooks decided, well, I've got a lesser, right? But I've got a different defender on me. Like, I have more of an ability to create a shot. And to be fair, Brooks hit a big three. He got a big driving layup. He also missed about 5 other shots that were like, what the hell are these? And so you cut out 2 or 3 of those, what the hell are these plays? And maybe the ball game goes in a different direction. But that's where seasoning and understanding and all of this other stuff comes in. I will be interested, Pete, to see like what the lessons learned are from this, but not only learned, but applied. Because guys who need to learn and take from this the most, how capable they are of doing that is going to really influence the direction of the franchise in a way that goes beyond what Ja can do for them, right? Because Ja will need another guy or two to be like, no, we are the core of a championship team. The core of a team, right?
Yeah.
Ja can spearhead that, but who are the guys who are going to, like, who are going to be his Klay and Draymond, basically? And
yeah,
we'll see what comes of this.
They're a team to me that needs 1 or 2 2-for-1 type of trades that acquires a player that's in between a Ja and a Jaren Jackson, right? Yep. Like, if they had BI, for example, they'd be right up there in the conversation. You know what I mean? And so I'm very curious to see where Memphis goes from here. Fun night. We got a fun night ahead. A pair of game fives in a 2-2-2 series tonight. This is one of my favorite scenarios in basketball. And we'll be back tomorrow to cover all that. Talk some Lakers, I think, a little bit tomorrow, too.
Bye.
But until then, Hey, but until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.